Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and your family. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's show. And I guarantee you, I think we all know someone that we'll think about while we're watching this, and we'll go, okay, I got it. And forward the show to them, let them tune in, or just let them know that they can come back and they can tune in later by going to answers.network. So, and I want you also to know that I am truly grateful for those of you that take your time to listen to or to watch this show, and especially those that send in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions. Please remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, please go to our website at answers.network or answersforthefamily.com and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your loved ones. Now, a little bit of statistics in regards to our topic today. According to Kids Count Data Center, the United States has averaged approximately 420,000 adoptions per year since 2009. So think about that for a minute. I mean, we're talking about something that is going on everywhere. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about our guest. After placing her newborn son for adoption in 2013, Hope O. Baker struggled with depression, addiction, and overcoming the stigma that surrounds birth mothers. In her first book, Finding Hope, A Birth Mother's Journey into the Light, she shares her story of success and the success that comes from a successful open adoption. And she also shares the heartache and light that came along the way. Hope is a passionate advocate for those on all sides of adoption, and you can find her online at hopeobaker.com, or you can follow her on Instagram at hopeobaker. Now, she visits her son regularly and, fortunately for us, joins us today on Answers Network. Hope, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Alan. I'm excited to be here.
All right. Now, for everybody out there, the voice that you're hearing of hers is not the normal voice. So she has decided to drink some honey and tea and get through a sore throat and still go ahead and do the show. Now, before we really get into the book, can you share a little bit about you before you made the decision to place your son up for adoption?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I found later on in life is that, you know, I was 21 years old. I was a college student working as a server bartender, didn't have much money in my bank account, and went through a crisis pregnancy. And it's interesting because when you read the book and as we talk, you're going to hear that I, you know, struggled with depression. And I don't think that that was necessarily isolated to the adoption, because I think I struggled as a teenager with it a little bit on and off. But for the most part, I was always a very happy-go-lucky, positive, you know, lots of friends, enjoyed my family, college student. And I'll tell you, finding out you're pregnant when that wasn't in the cards or in the plans. Mm-hmm. I think we all find out things on a regular basis that we weren't planning for, really just shifted and altered the course of my life. And I, you know, made the decision to go down that adoption route. And I don't regret it, but it definitely altered, you know, the person I was pre that day finding out I was pregnant and who I was post.
And if you can share a little bit about what you go through making that decision, because there's obviously, you know, there's, you know, you discuss it with your parents. There is the, you know, discussing it with the father of the child, if that was done. Share a little bit about that process.
Yes. So it's interesting because there were certain people in my life when I told them I was pregnant, their initial reactions were, you can't keep that baby, whether it was going to go down the route of abortion or adoption. I mean, that was just their first reaction of, that's not what you want. Mm-hmm. And there was other people in my life who said, you can do this. You're a determined, strong person. You can make anything happen. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, having a baby and giving the baby love and a great life. So, you know, having those conversations were very difficult. I remember having to call my mom while I was in the clinic to come there. And I told the nurse who was in there, like, I can't say it. I physically don't think I can say it. I need you to tell her. I'll be in the room, but I can't say it. And I think, you know, sitting down with my friends and telling them my small little close knit, who I actually was on vacation with last week, the same people, which is very cool. It was extremely challenging because it's also this whole judgment, you know, that fear of judgment of what are people going to say that I had an accidental pregnancy at 21. You know, and I didn't want to be shamed. So I actually hid my pregnancy from everybody except for my immediate family and a couple close friends, and my boss at the place that I was going to be working that summer, because she needed to know that I couldn't, you know, I was a bartender. I couldn't lift certain things, and I, you know, I might need breaks. And if I have to stand on my feet in the heat, like, I might need some time inside. Like, this is, so I didn't tell a lot of people. And I do remember the day that I finally came, I call it my coming out day of being a birth mother, because I had written an anonymous blog for probably 3 years. And I finally just said, I'm not afraid to be judged anymore. I'm not afraid of the shame, because I'm, you know, I'm proud of the decision I made. You know, was it the right, it was the right decision at the time. And I don't think I need to hide anymore. But certainly when I first found out, I wanted to hide from everybody.
What sort of feedback were you getting on your blog as you were discussing this anonymously?
That is probably what made me finally feel free to speak about it, because I got so many women saying, wow, I felt the same way, or I have been in hiding for 25 years, never told another soul. I've met people, you know, from that blog who were 50 years old, had children when they were 18 or 19, and nobody ever knew except their parents, nobody. And I think it really provided a safe space for people to say, I'm not alone, because I started that blog because I felt alone. And I, you know, the couple people that knew I had a baby, nobody understands unless you've been through it. So I didn't know any other birth moms, you know, I didn't know any, and I wasn't, you know, necessarily getting the support or seeking out other birth moms. I thought that was challenging, because then I'd have to show my face and who I was and this decision I made. So the feedback from that blog is what I think finally said, you know, showed me that you should speak about this, because all of these people are saying that this is helping them. And why do I need to hide this? You know, if I could help more people, and I love how you started off and your gratitude journal and all of those things, because if we can share these experiences that we're feeling, and, you know, it helps people get through their day, just knowing that there's another person in this world who felt the same way I felt. And it's okay to feel that way. And it's okay to feel sadness about it and guilt and shame and regret. But you don't have to feel alone.
Yeah, it's amazing how times have changed so much. You know, as an international detective, I have located birth mothers, you know, for people that of all ages, adults of all ages that have, but they have just found out, you know. So, I mean, I've had people that are 30, 40 years old that have just found out from their adopted parents that they were adopted that have then hired someone like me to go find their birth parent. And it just, it seems so sad. I would find the birth parent, I would contact them and ask, do they want to be, you know, do they want me to give their information to them? And so many of them, it's such an incredibly emotional experience. And they have all said yes, you know, yes, they do. But I've also thought about the fact that they've gone that 30 or 40 years without that connection. But I believe we were a culture, you know, that many years ago that felt it was more important to hide that.
Yeah, there are books like The Girls Who Went Away, a lot of books that go into stories of women who have never shared their stories, mm-hmm. where they were sent to maternity homes or sent to live and with a relative because they were sick or, you know, and it was just, they never saw their children again. And I have friends who are birth moms who have no idea what their children's name are. They don't know if they're alive or if they're dead. They don't know these things. And I have many adoptee friends who have no idea who their biology is. And when they're trying to find them and they're trying to get access to these original birth certificates that show their names, they can't. Yeah. I mean, they legally can't. In most states, they can't, even if it's your original birth certificate as an adoptee, but you have no legal right to it and you have to pay to go to court, and that's never a guarantee. And I have a friend who recently found her birth mother, and her birth mother lived only a week after they met each other for the first time.
Wow.
And it's just, you know, this, it all goes back to the judgment and the shame. And I think the lack of education, because back then they thought, you know, first off, it's shame on the family, but they also thought it was better for the birth mom and the birth father too. We forget about them a lot, but the birth father to just move on and get on with your life. And also for the adoptee to just have the life with their parents as their parents and not have that complication. And what we're finding now is that is absolutely not right. It's okay. Like, it's okay to have, I think, the distance. You know, I have adoptees and birth mothers who don't see the children, but at least they know them and maybe they'll get updates and so forth. But that secrecy only hurts both sides because the adoptees feel shame about it too. I mean, I'm not the only one in the triad who's feeling that shame. And I think, you know, as more adoptions become open in these, you know, the times as we move forward, we're going to see that big shift because there's nobody not know where they come from. But that doesn't change anything about wanting to know your biology. I mean, imagine living life and not matching the people who are raising you and never understanding why. Doesn't mean you don't love them. It just means you're genetically not mirroring because your biology doesn't match. And I think a lot of adoptees, adult adoptees, they go through this when they don't know who their families are. And they think that, why, what's wrong with me? Why don't I have the same features, or why don't I act or have the mannerisms that my siblings do, who actually have biology? And, you know, there's a lot of adoptees who you meet who, when they found out they were adopted, it's their first feeling was, this makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow, I finally get it. I finally understand why I've struggled for the last 30 years or, you know, 18 mm-hmm. years about this and about not fitting in.
Yeah. And there's also for health reasons, you know, that, you know, especially in this day and age where we have the ability to look at our DNA, we have the ability to look and see if, you know, by having our blood work done, to have an idea of what we might be more susceptible to. So, yeah. Which is just another very positive reason why we should know, be able to know that the health and, you know, the blood work on our parents, so that we know, you know, that, hey, we have a possibility that we have, that we could lean towards getting something. And if there's a way to protect ourselves again from that, we can do it.
Yep.
Now, you mentioned something when you said about the kind of the heartbreak of the people that are trying to find and can't because of the laws and how the, you know, the records are sealed. They can't get access to it. I sat in on one of the most emotional therapy sessions that I've ever been in, where it was the the birth mother was now trying to find their child, but was not given access to any of those records. So they sat in with a hypnotherapist, and the hypnotherapist took her back to when she was 15 years old and was signing documents. And while she was under, she started crying, but the therapist is asking her to read the document that she's signing that would give us information as to who the people were that were getting her child, because that's what she was doing. And she was crying during this session. And then the therapist said, well, you know, can you read the paper? And she said, I'm trying. It's all wet. It has tears all over it. It broke my heart at that point, realizing the trauma that she went through at 15, that she was now reliving. But on the positive side, she was able to read that paper while under hypnosis that gave us the name of the family who adopted the child, which allowed us to find the child. And there was a happy ending to this, because everybody was happy. When I contacted the adopted parents, they were very open about giving us the information as to the child, which wasn't a child anymore. And they were also very open about a reunion of everybody. So it did have a happy ending, but it was truly a very, very emotional situation.
I hear stories like that every single day. And it's heartbreaking that people have to go through that, and that, you know, you have a baby and they exist in a world where you don't exist, and you don't even know if they're alive, if they're okay, if they're well, if they know about you, if they want to know you, because mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. Yeah. And I tell people this all the time, that when, you know, luckily I'm in an open adoption, but when I placed my son, they told me I could get a copy of his original birth certificate. And legally, you can do that in the hospital, right? You can order an original birth certificate. Right. But they don't tell you that usually. So nobody knows. Like, nobody knows that they legally have the right to that piece of paper. Like, the birth mothers do. They have the right to that. Until the adoption is finalized, you have the right to those documents, because that's your legal document. Once it's finalized, of course, it's sealed. But I did, I'm actually, you know, we're launching a podcast where I'm the birth mother, there's an adoptee, and there's an adoptive parent, all in this space. Mm-hmm. And we had a gentleman on who lobbied in the state of New York for adoptees to have the legal right to that document because of health reasons. And because it's their document, it has their name on it. They should have legal right under the Constitution. They should have legal right, and they won. And now there are thousands of adoptees in New York who are going through the process to request their original birth certificate. Thousands of them who just want to know. And it's, you know, they just want to know what they're, you know, they want that document. And it's just crazy to think about. You said in the beginning, there's over 400,000 adoptions a year, you know, and part of those are from foster care. So I think mm-hmm. some of the documents might be, you know, your case files. I don't know how those get sealed. I'm not involved in that as much. But you think about that, means, you know, how many birth mothers are out there who don't know? How many adoptees are sitting here wondering, you know, who am I? Who are my parents? Birth parents, not that the adoptive parents are not parents too. Right. But I think we just got to get that out of our head. I mean, I talk to people all the time about this. I think a lot of it is fear and an ego thing. Right? How do we just say there's enough love for all of us, for the baby and for the child growing up? We have to get rid of that stigma around the fear that there can only be one set of parents, right? It's mm-hmm. better for the child. It's better for all involved. I don't want to have to, you know, maybe we talk again in 5 years, and I hope we can say that the open adoption rates have been, you know, more open adoptions are happening than closed, because they will always happen. I mean, women are always going to be in crisis pregnancies. They just are. So adoption's not going to go away. Right. But now we have to figure out, how can we make it more ethical and more, you know, just emotionally more ethical for all sides involved.
Yeah. Now you mentioned that you're going to be having a podcast starting and such, which I think is great. And it made me think of I think I can connect you with some really good guests, what I'd like to do, and we can do it off the air, but to connect you with the World Association of Detectives, and through the executive office, they could get you the people who specialize in adoption cases in whatever country you wanted. You could get one of them as a guest that can provide a lot of information for people out there on the things that they can do. You know, yep. And, you know, they themselves can do, as well as what an investigator can do to help them find either their, depending on which direction it is, if it's the child looking for the parent or the parent looking for the child.
So interesting enough, mm-hmm. one of the hosts is an adoptive mom of three children, mm-hmm. and she is a detective.
Oh, she is a licensed. Perfect. Then you have it. That's
yeah. Great. She's actually there. You know, she's in shooting a pilot right now for TLC on that topic.
Oh, so it's just perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
So now, one of the things that I also mentioned at the beginning of the show is that, you know, you talk about in your book that that there was a lot of emotional trauma that. I think as you're making these decisions, I think a lot of people then aren't really focused on how this is going to affect afterwards. So talk a little bit about not only what you went through in regards to your struggles with addiction and depression, but also what you did to get through that.
Yeah. So when you go through a agency, so for my adoption, it was private. So I, you know, self-matched with a woman. There was no agencies involved. It was just attorneys. So in my instance, the support I got beforehand was like an hour session with a social worker, which was just like going over documents, right? There wasn't any, I'm going to try to prepare you for what's to come, or, you know, other women who have placed, this is what they've gone through. Sorry about that. There was a thing coming on my computer. So, you know, in my situation, my pre-placement support was zero, mm-hmm. you know, basically. And my post-placement support was, you know, luckily my son's mom, she actually put in our agreement that I could have, I think it was like 5 therapy sessions post-placement. Mm-hmm. So that was the equivalent of the support that I got pre and post. I'm so sorry. My notifications should be off. So that was just the extent of what I got. And I think, you know, I went years without ever speaking to a support group or somebody who could help me. I mean, literally years. And when, you know, even when you go with an agency, the support just doesn't exist. So what did I do? I tried to solve it myself. And, you know, that wasn't working because I think I leaned on drinking and I leaned on trying to numb myself of what was going on. Because I couldn't, you know, if I wasn't drunk, I couldn't talk about it either. I needed to be mentally altered to even speak about it. So then every time I was drinking, I was talking about it and just I could get out my emotions and everything. And so I leaned on that for many, you know, many years. And
right.
Let me just get this notification shut off. I'm so
sorry. That's okay. I think while we're
we're good to go. I'm so sorry. No,
that's okay. But we have a question that has come in. And so what I'd like to do is to go ahead and ask this question. And then I want us to take a break. And so for everybody, I want you to stay with us so that Hope will answer or you can answer after the break. But this one reads, my cousin was in the middle of a very difficult divorce when her barely 15-year-old daughter became pregnant. Torn on what to do, a friend suggested that they contact a group in Vermont to discuss how an open adoption might work. Several families' information arrived, and they selected one couple that turned out to be quite wonderful. That was 20 years ago, and the relationships grew very beautifully. Being so young in the beginning, it says Julie, naturally felt more like an older sister than, quote, the mother of her child. As I am sure there are many young girls and their families who may find themselves in a similar situation. I thought it would be nice to share this very successful story. And this is from Olivia, currently in Nevada. So if you can, you know, we're going to take a break. So for everybody out there, stay with us. But when we come back, Hope, I'd like you to talk a little bit about that story. All right?
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. So everybody, stay with us. You're listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We are speaking with Hope O. Baker, and we are talking about adoption, and we're talking about it from the standpoint of the emotional side. What are the things that the birth mother goes through when making this very, very emotional decision? And when we went to break, we had someone who was calling in with a comment that talked about, a 15-year-old daughter that had become pregnant, and they talk about the fact that, you know, 20 years later, that the relationship has actually grown really well, and they just wanted to share this story. Hope, what's your thoughts on this one?
This is the goal, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like we were talking about right before, adoption's always going to exist, always. And I feel as time goes on, these are more of the stories that we're going to hear. I talked with a woman a couple weeks ago where they're going to write a book together, the birth mom and the adoptive parent. And she's just always been ingrained in the life. Like they've, you know, it's been, I think her child is 9 and she's just always been there in holidays, and it's normal. And it's not anything, there's no judgment or shame involved. It's just, this is, you know, this is who she is. So I think these are the stories we want to hear. It's so tragic that there is, you know, this isn't the norm yet. But I hope that as time goes on and as people start to share their stories more and you have more successes just like this one, that this becomes the norm. And I thank her for sharing it. And I think, you know, Julie, I think is what you said her name was. And, you know, mm-hmm. we're in this together. All of us birth mothers are in this together. And, you know, I wish her the best. And I'm so glad that she is having this type of experience. It doesn't erase the trauma, though, I will tell you. I mean, I'm in an open adoption as well. So sometimes when we have these open adoption and the success stories, sometimes the support is not necessarily there for both the adoptee and the birth mother, because people think that because it's open, maybe it's not needed. It's just normal. But I do still think that, you know, I hope that she talks about her feelings and goes to support groups and does all the things. But this is the goal for adoption. This story is the goal.
Well, one of the things that you talk about in the book, which is your decision to have a child after the adoption. Share a little bit about that and, you know, how you came to that decision and how that has worked out for you.
So there is going to be a second book, because I will tell you, in the last year of my life, everything has changed. And when I wrote that book, I was engaged and, you know, was deeply in love. I still love this, you know, this man with my whole life or with my whole heart, but it just wasn't the right fit. And I think it's interesting because, you know, when COVID hit and I realized that I was going to be stuck in a house with this person for potentially 6-7 months, I just everything and shifted. So, you know, that relationship has ended. I was living in London at the time, and now I'm back in Minnesota, and, you know, I'm 2 miles away from my parents. So it's interesting because at that time when I wrote the book, we were talking about having a baby, and then, you know, life situations happened and my life is completely different. So do I think I want to have a baby, you know, at some point? Yes. But did I think that for the first 6 years? Absolutely not. I mean, I literally used to have what I call, and you read them in the book, mini funerals. That's what I called it, for this life that I could never have. You know, I never thought I would get married or have children or just do all of these things because I didn't think I deserved that. I didn't think, how could I do that to my son? How could I do that to him? You know, after, you know, placing him for adoption, I never wanted him to feel like somebody else was more important than he was. Mm-hmm. And they got to be, you know, they didn't get have to be adopted, but he did. And I never wanted to go through that. But I think as time has gone on, I've realized that I was a woman in crisis. And, you know, I made the best choice. And I hope that he sees that as well. He has a great life. And his, you know, his mom is amazing. She's a single mom. So she's just, you know, she's amazing. And I know he may have trouble someday, but I'll be ready to have that conversation if I ever do choose to have a baby. But yeah, my life is completely different than it was in that book. Let me tell you, it's been some changes.
We have another comment or question coming in via email. This one reads, I was born in Haiti and I was adopted by a family in Chicago when I was less than a year old. I have dreamt of what it would be like meeting my birth mother. And now, after reading about your experiences, I feel I need to try my best to find her. I think that whatever happens, I need to face the fear of what may come next. By the way, I loved your book, and I wanted you to know that it helped me see things from a different perspective. And that is Eva in Illinois.
Wow. Thank you, Eva. I will tell you, there's a huge community online of adoptees who were adopted from Haiti. So I, you know, if you want to send me a message on Instagram, I will absolutely try to get you connected with them, because there's a huge community who are trying to find their parents or have successfully found them and are trying to help other, you know, other adoptees find their parents. So send me a message and I'll connect you with them.
Okay. And now, speaking of that, but it sounds like you really have now, either with your blog or with your life, you're focusing a lot on empowering women to help them make the right choice for their own bodies in situations, as well as supporting them afterwards. Share a little bit about that.
You know, I think that as women, we're told that the way society sometimes views women is not to live up to our value. And, you know, maybe that's just where I've lived and where I've grown up and the businesses that I've worked for. But I've definitely experienced these instances of feeling less than, and not just with being a birth mother, but just being a woman in business or just a woman in general. Like, I wasn't, you know, as deserving as my male counterpart, or I didn't deserve that pay raise that they got, or all of these different things. And I think if more women would come together and say, we're not going to accept this anymore. Like, we're not going to accept not being treated as equals. And sometimes we may be better than the male we're supposedly supposed to be equal. So we should be acknowledged for that, right? Just like, and, you know, men would. So I really do. And not even, you know, the adoption community is very, very, you know, part of my focus in life. But empowering women and making sure that women are acknowledged for the work they do is extremely important. And I actually launched this month at my company where I, you know, the whole month of March, I was sending out daily testimonies that I had the employees send in to me. And then I shared the story of, let's celebrate the women in our lives and the people who shaped us. And maybe it was your boss or your mom or your sister, and let's celebrate them every single day of March so that we, you know, can ensure that we're acknowledging that women, you know, are here to stay and we're great and we're wonderful. And it's not that men aren't, but let's all just, you know, we're all wonderful. So let's celebrate it. And, you know, if you talk to my friends, I mean, I'm always the one who's like, ask for the pay raise, you know, share your story, speak up. If you're in a meeting, speak up, use your voice. If you see something, if you're, you know, in a relationship and you're feeling like things, you're not being treated equally or right, walk away. You know, like this is, it's sometimes very blunt, but it's also coming from a place of women do deserve to take up space and we deserve to have our voices heard, birth mothers as well. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, extremely, extremely all about women empowerment and ensuring that we are taking up space that we are entitled to and we deserve.
All right. We have another question that is coming in via email. This one reads, I am 19 years old and just learned that I am 3 months pregnant. I'm afraid to go to my parents for help. And due to COVID, I am out of work. I am thinking adoption is the best way to go, but I just don't know where to turn. I would appreciate any suggestions. It says, thank you from Melinda in Seattle, Washington.
So what, Melinda, if you send me a DM as well, I will find you an ethical agency to speak to. And I think your first step here is you need to get options counseling because there are many options. And in each state, there are also many programs to help women who do want to keep their children and they do want to raise them. And if that's a path you want to go down, there are systems to support you. And if adoption is a path you want to go down, let me help you find an ethical agency because there are a lot out there that are extremely unethical and they don't provide pre-support options, counseling, post, you know, post-placement support. So send me a message and we'll find you one together that will give you that the options counseling.
All right. And what is the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Instagram DM. I'm pretty, you know, I check my, you know, all the folders that are on there on a regular basis. So I would probably say that. Yeah.
Okay. And the best place to get the book?
Amazon. Amazon is probably the easiest for everybody, but you can get it online at Target, Walmart, Barnes and Noble. Local bookstores can also order it for you. If you go in there, they can order mm-hmm. it for you as well.
Okay. And now, for those that may not want to necessarily contact you, but in each state, what are the departments that are best for people to go to? I mean, I know that each state has these available to them, but you know, what is the name of them, or how can they best get to the right group, and hopefully something that's maybe tied into the government in the sense that you know that there's not a cost to them.
Yeah. So if you look up Big Tough Girl on Instagram, she has, and you go to her bio and you look at the links in her website and for her website, she has a plethora of information about state by state, ethical agencies, all the different things you could need. She has workbooks. I mean, just all the things. And she's a birth mom. Okay. So she has all of that by state. And I know that she is very, very, very much only ethical agencies. She's stopped working with them if she hears a story from a birth mom that wasn't ethical. So you can go there and go state by state about different agencies and different supports for sure.
Okay. And again, that was, say what that is again.
She's Big Tough Girl on Instagram.
Big Tough Girl. So that's at. That's the
at Big Tough Girl.
At Big Tough Girl on Instagram. So that's great. So what you're saying is that she's given a one-stop place for people to look at things for most any state if they want to be able to look up either an ethical adoption agency or something where the information will be there for them to know what their options are.
Yeah, she actually has a, you know, a foundation that is all, you know, support groups of birth moms, all the things. So she was a birth mom who struggled without support, much like me, and decided to dedicate her life to supporting birth mothers and making sure that there were support groups and that agencies were getting training on how to be more ethical. So she is a great, great resource for all the things.
Okay. And then how would you recommend to somebody if they want to bring all the people involved together? So maybe somebody who's already gone through this, but hasn't established the situation you have to where you're visiting them and you're spending time with them. What would be the way to kind of go into that? Because I think for some people, that's a delicate situation.
Yeah. So this is something I struggled with when I was needing either more, you know, maybe more visits, more phone calls. And I had a conversation with an adoptive mom, and her advice to me was ask for what you need. Ask. I really think that this is the biggest thing, that whether you're a birth mom, an adoptee, an adoptive parent, we get so scared of being told no or getting rejection or, you know, anything that could happen. We don't ask the questions. And I think we'd be surprised about what all different sides will be willing to give if we ask. And even if we get told no, that doesn't mean that that's a no forever. Ask again later on. And one thing I can say, you know, as a birth mother, if you don't have necessarily access to your children, one thing that I do, even though I have access, is I send him postcards. Mm-hmm. Every time I travel somewhere, I send him a postcard, you know, just, you know, something about my trip, miss you, whatever, which has been great for us. And if you don't have access to them, save those, write them letters, write them postcards that someday, you know, when that access is there, you can give to them and you can share with them, you know, you never stop thinking about them and they've always been a part of your life, even though they weren't there. I know that, you know, that's helped my situation and many other birth mothers are doing the same. So that those are great options, but ask anything in life, right? You exactly. Gotta ask, yeah. You gotta ask.
So how old is your son now?
He's gonna be 8 in September.
Gonna be 8. Now, what is his perception of his situation?
Well, he's always known that maybe not when he was a baby, I guess, but he's always known that he birthed mom and that he came from my tummy. You know, when I go see him, he calls me Hopi. That's just his name for me, which that's what a lot of my friends and family call me too. So it is really an open, you know, it's extremely open. And I think as time goes on, I hope that he wants to, you know, share his story and experiences as well. But I never feel like I'm hidden, right? There's pictures of me in his room. So I think that building that openness and that space to communicate, you know, he's told me before, I want to see you more because I don't feel like I know you enough to be comfortable around you. I mean, you think he's 7.
Yeah.
And that's something he said to me, like, I want to know you more so I can be more comfortable around you. So he's obviously feeling safe enough to share those feelings.
Pretty deep.
Pretty deep. And it really was like, you know, hits me in the feels. And I mean, I would be there every weekend if you wanted me to be, you know, I would be, but you know, we'll see as time goes on. And if he wants more access to me, I will always give him that. And if he wants less, I just have to deal with that and hope that as we continue to just keep, you know, getting to know each other more, that he, you know, will want the access that he wants. But I think that everything is going to tailor around his feelings. You know, he's the most important person here, right? Mm-hmm.
It sounds like the adoptive mother is very secure. It sounds like that she is, and it sounds like that's what it takes.
Yeah, I mean, I think about adoptive parents, and I talk to some all the time, and it's all fear and ego-based when they don't want to give access to their children to the birth parents. You know, it's just that fear of what if they love them more, or what if I can't give them, you know, I want to give them everything they need, mm-hmm. because it's fear, you know, it's fear. And I, you know, her and I are lucky to have really bonded, especially while I was pregnant, because like I said, I hid my pregnancy. So I actually moved and lived with her for a couple months for the end of my pregnancy. And we did walks together, did prenatal yoga together, did, you know, all these things. So we were lucky enough to grow a bond that I think has, it's not without issues. You know, we've had our struggles, our quote unquote arguments or differences, but we really just created a space that we felt comfortable enough to say what we needed to say and to ask for what we needed. Of course, it's evolving. It hasn't always been perfect. When I was struggling with addiction, she probably, you know, wanted to keep distance from me, and I don't blame her. But, you know, as time goes on, it'll just keep evolving. And I tell you, I just, you know, I'm a spiritual person, I'd say, but I just pray to whatever's out there. I don't know who it is, but whatever's out there, that someday my son calls and says, you know, do you want to hang out, or do you want to, you know, come and see me? Like, those are just, I wait for those days.
what is the geographical distance? You said you're in Minnesota now. Where are they?
He's in LA.
Oh, okay.
So when, you know, I lived in California, San Jose, for a couple of years, and it's still been the same regular visits. And when I was in London for 2.5 years, still, you know, 2 to 3 times a year, anytime I could, I was there. And so we'll see. But if he called me, I don't care if I was having a great month or a bad month with money, I would just do whatever I could to just get there, because that's just, I can't wait for that day. It'll come. I know it will. And I'm going to, you know, be put that into this world and talking into existence, and, you know, it'll happen.
Now, one of the things, when you mentioned that, that she's a single parent, was she a single parent in the beginning of this process? Or was she married at that time and has since become single?
She's always been a single mom.
Okay.
And when I saw her, you know, her adoption book on Google, and I was just thinking, wow, I mean, I think sometimes, no offense, but sometimes when you got two people, it's great, of course. But I just, you know, my mom always saying that, wouldn't it be wonderful to not have to like consult someone else to make decisions? When she listens to this, she's going to laugh, because she did say that when I was looking at her book. She's like, hope, there is nothing wrong with that. If you feel bonder and a connection, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think she's got enough love to give him. And someday maybe there will be a husband, and that's great, you know, either way. But I knew when I met her that she was the one, regardless of, you know, relationship status or bank account or anything. I knew that if I couldn't parent him, she was the one who would be it. Just, I'm instantly strange.
Well, I think it's a beautiful story. And I'm so glad that you shared the book. I'm so glad that you came on the show to share it. And even with a sore throat, do keep us posted in regards to your podcast when it's out there. I'd love to have you back so that we can talk a little bit about that, and people that want to know, they can jump on. In fact, how soon is that going to get started?
So we are going to launch this summer.
This summer?
We're building our arsenal. We're getting them edited, and it's coming.
Well, let us know so that we can put a plug out for it, and people can know where to find you.
Absolutely, I will. I appreciate that.
All right. So again, thank you so much. And one more time, the best way for people to get in touch with you is?
I would probably say Instagram.
Okay.
Because if you go to my Instagram, Hope O. Baker, my email's there, my website's there, everything is there. So that is the best place to start.
All right. And for those of you out there, if you're driving and you can't write this down, we will have all this information on the answers.network site. Hope, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Alan. It's been a great time.
All right. So yeah, so have some more honey and tea and get that throat better.
Thank you.
All right. Now, for everybody out there, please join us again next Monday when we are joined by Dr. Joseph Cardeo. To discuss his new book, The 12 Rules of Attention, How to Self-Regulate and Train Your Brain's Attentional Mechanism for Faster, More Accurate, High-Quality Performance at Work and in Life. And please, if you get a chance, visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can subscribe to the show, which is so much easier, and then the shows will be sent to you. And you can do that through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, if you want to see us rather than just hear, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and many other popular podcasts. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It'll help us reach more people, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. And next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.